Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
I'm not going back to that place.
Well, what are you going to do?
I'll tell you what I'd like to do more than anything.
Yeah?
It'd serve our parents right if we ran away.
Oh, where would we go?
I know places.
I'm Jim Burns. Well, as parents, we do all we can to provide for our kids with the kind of home life that will help them succeed when they grow up. But sometimes, God chooses a less than perfect path for his children to take in order to find a great family. Well, during the next half hour, you're going to meet a man who knows what that's all about. His name is Jim Daly, and he says that he grew up in a home that put the D in dysfunction. His father struggled with substance abuse, his mother had lots of problems, died young of cancer, and his stepfather abandoned Jim and his siblings the day of his mother's funeral. Well, at age 9, Jim Daly began an odyssey that took him to more than 20 different homes by the time he graduated from high school. And yet, God had a plan for his life, and now he's a happily married father of 2 young sons. Plus, he's the president and the CEO of Focus on the Family. Jim Daly, a wonderful man, joins me here in studio to talk about an imperfect path to a great family. That's next, and it's going to be very inspiring. It's here on Homeward. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, graduating difference maker since 1899. Welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. During the next half hour, actually, we're kicking off a trifecta of sorts with Jim Daly, the president of Focus on the Family and actually a longtime friend of Dr. Jim Burns. During part one of this three-part conversation, you're going to hear Jim begin to share his remarkable story, what we call an imperfect path to a great family. And Jim wrote about his crazy autobiography is called Finding Home. And I say crazy because Jim has obstacles that would have knocked a lot of people off course. And then you think, wow, and now he's the president of Focus on the Family. It's a remarkable story. If you've never heard it before, here's part one at Dr. Jim Burns. Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Very happy to have Jim Daly with us. Jim Daly is the president, CEO of Focus on the Family. We're talking today about an imperfect path to a great family. Jim has written a wonderful book called Finding Home. I was telling Jim today at Starbucks, believe it or not, before we had some time, that I loved his book. I read the entire book. I read it at night. So I would tell my wife, Kathy, that there would be periodic times when I said, you know, I'm going to go spend some time with Jim Daly here, and I'd read the book. Jim, welcome to our program.
It's great to be with you, Jim.
We're here in the Focus on the Family studios, which is very different than the Homeward studios, but we're very grateful for your generosity to have us be here and get to spend some time
it's
talking with you.
Sorry we brought all the snow in for you here.
You do have some snow, and that's I'm not bitter about
yeah,
that.
But
I can also go back to a nice sunshine California. You say, I should be insane or in jail, and yet here you are, the president, CEO of, I think, the most influential parent and family organization in the world. I mean, talk about this.
Well, it's just looking at the background. I think a lot of my friends that I grew up with, unfortunately, didn't make it over the line, so to speak, and that saddens my heart. And you can't answer the question as to why, but I think I have enough of those relationships from back then that, you know, my heart's broken that people didn't make it out of the spiritual ghetto, so to speak.
Well, you say that you put the capital D in dysfunction. I mean, that was the home. I mean, your family life is unbelievable. I mean, I was telling you earlier, this could be a 60-minute movie or a movie about kind of craziness and weirdness in some ways in the midst of some very inspiring things.
Yeah.
But you came from a dysfunctional home. We're talking alcoholism and we're talking lots of other issues.
Well, I think, and you know, sitting here today, I'm looking at all the different family types that I had the pleasure, I guess you could say, of going through. And I had, up until 5 years old, kind of the normal, well, somewhat normal, intact family with an alcoholic father and a recovering alcoholic mother and 2 older brothers and 2 older sisters. So we're just trying to get along. Then my mom and dad split. So I've got single parent mom. She remarries. I have stepdad in the typical form. And then my mom dies. And there I am with nobody. My stepdad walked out on the family. We moved in with foster care. That didn't work. I then moved back in with my father as a single-parent stepfather, and then I moved in with my brother after he passed away, and you know, then my senior year of high school, I lived on my own. So I mean, it is inconceivable that someone would have thought, Focus on the Family, the guy here, would have gone through all those different family types. But maybe it was the Lord just saying, hey, I want to put you through everything so you can experience
it. Well, what's amazing about that, and I was actually talking earlier today with Ryan Dobson, Dr. Dobson's son, and I'd mentioned it to you as well. You know, you walk into this place and here's Ryan's grandfather, Dr. Dobson's father, in a statue praying for his son. His son has amazing spiritual heritage, Dr. Dobson. You replace Dr. Dobson. And yet this, what you just described, there are people probably in shock because they say, how could this guy run Focus on the Family? Your wife, when you explained to her, she said, who would have thunk it?
Well, I'm in the front of the line. I'm in shock. I mean, it wasn't something I was aiming for. And I think it's just like God's sense of humor to say, okay, I'm going to use the foolish things of this world to confound the wise. Right. I mean, that's just an illustration of it.
But it's also an incredible story of an imperfect path, an imperfect start to what becomes a good family. Now, obviously, I want to spend a little time talking about Focus on the Family, but I want to talk about your own family. I mean, today you're married to Jean. You've been married for 21 years. You have two sons, Trent and Troy. And it's not that life is perfect, but you've made this transition from kind of the dysfunctional to moving toward health, and that will be generational. Decision.
Yeah.
Not easy for you.
Certainly, hopefully, that's the goal. And I think that's the blessing of the Lord. I mean, that is what it's all about. But to your point, it isn't perfect. And that's the reality. I think every family has some sort of dysfunction in it. And I think even as Christians, we've got to come to that realization that it's not perfect. We do not live in a perfect world. We are not perfect. I'm not a perfect person.
Now, I'm going to spend a little time getting through some of your story because it's an amazing story. And yet at the same time, you do not seem to be bitter or resentful about this. And yet you made a statement in your book where you said, the consequences of my dad's choice not to help out and his struggle with alcoholism in many ways affected every one of the daily children. Mm. So your dad chose to continue in alcoholism, not an easy addiction to overcome, and it did affect the children. But today, all of the daily children, your two brothers and two sisters, are Christ followers as well.
That's right. And, you know, again, it's only by God's grace because of that forgiveness and that there really isn't any bitterness within the kids. It's an amazing thing. I think my oldest brother, Mike, who received physical abuse from my dad. He was the only one in the family that got it. He's the eldest, and there was something between him and my dad that was not healthy in that way. My dad never hit me. And I think that within our family, that remains one of the deep problems for my brother Mike. I mean, it saddens my heart because he took that abuse.
Well, you have an amazing passion for families, and I think one of the reasons was you were, you know, somewhere around 5 years old and your parents divorced. How did you feel as a 5-year-old?
Different. The best way to describe it, I think as a 5-year-old when I went to school or went to do the mom and dad things at school, it wasn't there. And in the 60s, it wasn't normal. Mm-hmm. And you felt shame. There was this an amazing amount of shame. I remember playing football. I played football in high school on dad's night, you know, when dad's supposed to trot out on the field with you and put his arm around you and hug you and say, good job, kid. I was the quarterback of the team and I'd run out there by myself.
Right.
Every other guy had his dad alongside him. I was so embarrassed, you know. I mean, it was crushing. So as a kid, I mean, those are the things that hurt me. Yeah. Those are the emotional pulls. Right. But it didn't, I can honestly say I wasn't bitter about it. I was simply embarrassed for him. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like it was my fault. I didn't own it. And I just wish more children could grasp that. And, you know, I credit my mom to a large degree with that ability to look through it, look beyond it. She would often say to us, you know, this isn't your fault. She would say the right things to help encourage us and build our confidence.
You talk about your mom, and you actually talk so well about your mom.
Most of the people that came into contact with my mom found a quick friend.
Yeah.
And she did have a way of just being engaged, working with the PTA. I don't know how she did it, writing school plays for my brothers and sisters' plays. And she was just really engaged with us. And I think in the end, that made all the difference in the world.
She ended up remarrying a guy you called Hank the Tank.
Yeah, even at 8, I kind of had a little bit of a side to me that was a zip, you know. And Hank was just maybe your typical stepdad, at least what you picture. Mm-hmm. It looked like a 6'3" Tully Savalas. And that's how I described him in the book. He just was this mountain of a muscle and no hair and intimidating fella. And he was in the military for 20 years and came into this rather disorganized family and tried to organize it. And it created nothing but friction.
Yeah. And yet at the same time, through this process, he did some things. He had you know, as a family pray, and you guys hadn't spent a whole lot of time praying, but you pray at dinners, it sounds like that. He kind of introduced that, even though he didn't have a spiritual bent.
He did introduce it. It was because of my mother's health situation. None of us, the kids weren't aware that she was dying of colon cancer. Right. And Hank, he loved my mom, I got to say. Yeah. He really loved my mom. But that that amount of love on one side of the scale, he had that same kind of dislike for the kids.
Right.
But he would sit around the table. He was a gourmet chef after he got out of the military. That's what he did. And we would sit around the dinner table and he'd say, let's pray for your mother. And we'd start to pray and he would just convulse and weep. And he'd get up and excuse himself and go back to the bedroom, spend time with my mom.
And you didn't know that your mom was was dying at the time. We're going to take a break. Yeah. When we come back, I want to actually take us to the graveside of your mom's funeral and then what happened when you returned home. We'll be right back. Jim Daly with us.
And it's an incredible story. If you're just tuning in to Homeward, I highly recommend that you go to homeward.com and scroll back. Go back to the beginning and then listen to the first segment, or we'll be happy to burn you a CD if you'd like. You can sign up for the podcast of this program, because the Homeward Daily release today focuses on Jim Daly, who's the president of Focus on the Family. He wrote an autobiography called Finding Home, and it tells the remarkable story of him and his brothers and sisters and the fact that their parents divorced. His mother was dying of cancer, and his stepdad didn't even bother to tell the family. He didn't know how to tell them. And it's just, what happens next is truly remarkable. So you want to stay with us through the break. Finding Home is up at homeward.com. And we want to remind you that when you check out homeward.com, browse a while. Find out how easy it is to subscribe to our podcast. You can do that through iTunes, and we've got a link at homeward.com. Also, sign up for our daily online devotional, our evotional, that features a Bible verse and a nugget of encouragement from God's Word, courtesy of Dr. Jim Burns and the staff at Homeward. You'll find it all at homeward.com.
I'm Jim Burns with today's Homeward Snapshot.
Hey, I'm home!
Mom? What's this? Dear Jacob, dinner is in the microwave, and make sure to brush your teeth after you take a shower. And no video games until your homework is done. Oh, man. I'll be home late again. Page me or call my cell before you go to bed. Love, Mom. Well, Scruff, it looks like we've got the whole house to ourselves again.
It's no joke. All studies on positive family living say that the key to successful families hinge on families spending meaningful time together, like at the dinner table. You know what that means, don't you? Soccer moms and soccer dads who leave work early to be at their kids' activities are building bonds of connection that won't soon be broken. Well, for my free tip sheet called The Power of Being There, log on to homeward.com. I'm Jim Burns. Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. Jim Daly with us today, the president and CEO of Focus on the Family, probably the most influential family organization in the entire world. Jim Daly has quite a story of great dysfunction, if you've just tuned in, but a story of coming from a family where there was major dysfunction, and yet today he leads this phenomenal ministry. Great to have Jim with us. Jim, the death of your mom was incredibly traumatic. You're 9 years old, if I'm not mistaken. Two brothers and two sisters are there. You're at the graveside service, but Hank the Tank, your stepfather, is not there. I want you to pick up the story.
Yeah. Actually, we're at the chapel with the service, and Hank was unable to go. He just was emotionally distraught, could not manage going. I think he went on a binge himself, actually. Yeah. And, you know, I think we were there, and I don't know why we do this to children particularly, but I remember that funeral. There were probably 500-600 people at her funeral. Yeah. And you go out in order of your age. Right. So I'm the youngest, so I go out last. My two older brothers go out one at a time, my two sisters. My one sister turned to me right before they all left me in that little family room adjacent to the casket, typically. And she said, remember, kiss Mom. Kiss her goodbye, because you won't see her again. And I'm just standing there frightened, afraid to, you know, what's happening? So they go up and they walk away. Then the nod comes. It's time for me to go out there. And I'm just standing in front of that casket, and I'm looking at the shell of my mom. And I'm debating in my mind, do I kiss her? Do I not kiss her? I mean, what do I do? I don't want to kiss her. This isn't my mom. Yeah. She's not stroking my head. She's not doing anything. And I reached in, I touched her hand. It was just like cold wax. Yeah. And I remember just thinking, don't cry, don't cry. Don't let anybody see
you cry.
You're
9 years old.
Yeah, I'm nine. It's all that's flowing through my mind. I lay the rose in the casket, said goodbye to my mom, and then turned and just saw 500 people staring at me, right, which totally freaked me out. Right. I just said, now what? And I just tried to walk down that aisle as a nine-year-old trying to say, okay, don't cry. Be a big boy. And we got into the car, then went to the gravesite. And that was a weird experience. I was the only kid there. You know, everybody else, they were older. And I remember just seeing my mom's casket there at the graveside and the pastor doing the service. And my mom accepted the Lord the day before she died. Awesome. The Hope family. I mean, God has a sense of humor.
Great?
The Hopes led her to the Lord. Mm-hmm. And we're there, and the clouds made like a staircase. Jim, I'm telling you the truth. Everybody saw it. In fact, my older brother, that was the first spiritual inkling mm-hmm. for him. Mm-hmm. And he became the Christian in the family after that. And but it was that door opening, those clouds formed like a staircase.
Amazing.
And we all thought, wow, that is quite a sign from
sometimes
God.
Sometimes God does give us a sign like that. And sometimes we miss it. Sometimes he doesn't. But you know, in that moment, that was something that you can hold on to now for the rest of your life.
So the five of us kids get home.
Right.
And there we are. Hank had stayed home. We got there. All the furniture was gone in our little house in Long Beach, California. And we looked around, and Hank came out from the master bedroom, bags packed, and he just simply said, I can't take the stress. I'm moving back to San Francisco. And he jumped in a cab that was on the curb. None of us had noticed it sitting there. And he just jumped in the cab and took off. And there the five of us sat in that house just looking at each other, saying, what are we going to do? What's next?
And when you say what's next, I mean, you'd lived in a pretty highly, you know, dysfunctional family, highly unusual, I think is what you used. But then you said life was about to get really weird, as if that wasn't weird.
Yeah.
So what happens next?
Well, my brother, you know, my oldest brother, Mike, had to go to his ship that night. They were shipping off for Vietnam. So right behind Hank, a couple hours later, my oldest brother, Mike, 6'5", played football. He gave me a hug, said, Jimmy, I'm sorry, I got to go. And he went off to Long Beach Harbor to jump on the USS Kansas City. And, you know, the four of us are sitting there. My brother Dave said, I know a family out in Morongo Valley, the real family. Now, I don't know why God continues to do the name thing in our family, but the real family, I think they'll take us in. My brother knew one of their four sons, and he called them the next day, and they talked it over and said, no, we'd be more than happy to help you out. We just didn't know what we were walking into. Right. So the real family, they lived on disability. They were like characters out of John Steinbeck's book, Grapes of Wrath. I mean, this is Ma and Pa from the Grapes of Wrath. And they're on 5 acres, and they're growing vegetables, and they got chickens and goats and a donkey. And we get out there, and they had four sons, 18-year-old at the time, Dave, who married his 42-year-old cousin that year. And even as a 9-year-old from Long Beach, I thought, that's a little different. And Paul, my brother's friend, and Gary, who 15, homosexual, and Marky, 8, who just couldn't say a straight thing. He just had a problem with lying. And he would steal things from me, and I'd find him, and I'd go to his mom and dad and say, Mr. and Mrs. Real, I think Marky's taking these things. And I can remember them saying to me at 9, they'd say, oh, Jimmy, you're just not fitting in with our family. Mm. And I thought, man, maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah. But, you know, it's amazing that you had that kind of attitude. That would put some kids, when you said, you know, we started at the beginning of this broadcast, you know, you could be insane or curled up in a ball someplace. What kept you going?
I think, you know, one of the things, Jim, in some that have been, you know, a couple of the critics on the book, it's been, you know, your thought, Jim, is that you keep your expectations low. Mm. But, you know, scripturally, it says that. It says, don't put your trust in mere man because he'll let you down.
Right.
Put your trust in God. Yeah. And I can only say that I lived that. I didn't resent the people that were letting me down. I just knew that was humanity. Somehow I connected the dots as a kid that people will let you down and keep your expectations reasonable.
Yeah.
And that's just I think that's a good rule of thumb in life now for me.
The real family didn't really work out real good in the sense of actually Mr. Real was struggling with some, actually probably sounds like even a mental illness.
Correct.
In terms of certain things. And so all of a sudden now, I mean, you're still a young guy. Your dad comes back into the picture.
Correct. I mean, at the Reals, just to end that story, 6 months into it, I'm there with the social worker, and the social worker says, we've got a problem. And I thought, great, an adult that finally gets it. And she says, Jimmy, Mr. Real said you tried to kill him. Yeah. I was like, what? And it was the beginning of mental illness, I would say. And somehow he just took it all out on me. 6 months later, so we lived there for a year. 6 months later after that incident, so I'm just Mr. Wallflower, you know, I just go to school, come home, I go for long walks in the shrubs, you know, just to get out of the real family. And but my dad called and said, I heard about what happened to your mother. I'm coming to meet you and see how you guys are doing. I was just elated. Right. But if you came from an alcoholic home, Jim, I know you did. It's that feeling of dad. The Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing. I wanted to be with him. I wanted to live with him. I wanted him to save me, be my knight in shining armor, and get me out of the real family. And that weekend came. He came up and he said, Jim, I got to get you out of here. Why don't you come live with me? And then all of a sudden you're going, okay, is that a good idea? I don't know. How are you doing with your drinking, Dad? Right. But we did it. We moved in with him, my sister and I, both of us under 18 of the five kids. We were the remaining under 18-year-olds. And we moved into San Gabriel, and there we were for that year. And he, you know, he did not do well. And at the end of that time, the family had to pull together, and we had to decide whether I should stay there or not. Basically, the siblings are running the show.
Right.
That's the irony here. And,
right.
And we just had to get together, and I had to tell my father I didn't want to live with them anymore.
What's amazing about that, and we'll continue this conversation next time, but what's amazing about that is here is a kid who, if people have been listening to the whole program, you should be a delinquent. You should be in prison by now. You should be abusing people and all this. And yet, in some ways, God's hand was on your life, because do you believe that even at that time, he knew a little bit about where you're going to be going and the fact that you would be leading this incredible organization Focus on the Family?
I think he knew. I had no clue.
Right, sure.
But I remember even as a young kid, I have tons of freckles on the back of my legs, which I was always embarrassed about. But I can remember my dad one day asking me, I think I was five, he said, "Where did you get all those freckles?" And my immediate response was, God gave them to me.
Yeah.
So there was some seed in my heart that somehow my mom and others had planted there. And it took root. I mean, just that simple faith of a child. And I think those things made a big difference in my life.
Yeah. Well, those things do make a big difference. And I appreciate so much being with us. You got to come back next time, because this is a cliffhanger. This is part two is going to fill in the blanks. Can you come back?
Absolutely.
Great. Jim Daly, President, CEO of Focus on the Family, doing a great job at Focus on the Family, reaching millions and millions of people and bringing them hope and bringing families help in a big, big way. Finding Home is the name of his book, An Imperfect Path to Faith and to Family. Let me just simply say that, and Jim and I were talking about this before the program, that you've heard me say this if you ever listen to our program, that we talk about the transitional generation, and that if you come from a family where there's dysfunction, it may not be as weird and wacky as what you just heard, but most people come from a family where there's dysfunction. It just simply means broken. That you can be the transitional generation, that God, it says in the scripture, that we inherit the sins of previous generations to the third and fourth generation. But you know what? You will either recover or you can repeat. Jim Daly is a prime example of somebody who did not repeat the dysfunction, but is in the process of recovering. And notice I say process, because no one is going to be perfect here, okay? He's in the process of recovering. And you can too.
Absolutely. And this is such an inspiring conversation to share here, especially as we approach Father's Day, because if anybody in American culture had the right, as the culture would have it, to say, "I can't possibly be a good dad to my kids," it would be Jim Daly, because of his upbringing with an abusive father and stepfather and abandonment issues. And yet he and Gene and their two boys, I mean, have a great family story to share. And today here on the Homeward Broadcast, we are making our way through. We've come to the end of the first part of what will be a three-part conversation with Jim Daly on an imperfect path to a great family and then becoming the father you were meant to be. And Jim, I know that this story is so inspiring, because of all the people, I mean, you know Jim Daly very well, what a surprise it was for him to be put in the position he's in right now.
The day he became president of Focus on the Family, I rejoiced, because I went, here's a man who is authentic. You know, even in this conversation, you see a man who is authentic. He has a passion for family. He has a passion for his own family. And yet, you know, in many ways, and we kind of joked about this with our interview, but basically she'd be curled up in a ball drooling someplace.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's really amazing. Even the story of a stepfather who literally on the day of his mother's funeral, the stepfather cleans out the house and leaves, but yet the stepdad brought the kids together to pray when his mom was dying of cancer. And this man did not have a deep sense of faith, and it became a valuable lesson with a 9-year-old named Jim Daly about the power of prayer. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. A lot of times I think we beat ourselves up, Roger, spiritually, because we don't think we're doing enough when it comes to our spiritual lives or to our kids' spiritual lives.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced that any time spent, and I always say something is better than nothing. And sometimes we say, well, I don't spend an hour, so I don't want to spend any time because I feel so bad about just a short time.
You know, Jim, that's interesting, because having a daughter who works in the health and fitness industry, that's an adage that a lot of trainers will use. People will say, well, if I can't go to the right gym at the right time with the right clothes and spend the right amount of time doing this, that it doesn't really count. And her response is, look, any amount of sweat that you work up is better than no sweat at all. It's a good way to get your heart pumping and get your blood racing a little bit again. And it's the same thing in the spiritual realm as well. That's great counsel. I want to remind our listeners that Jim Daly is the author of a couple of books that we recommend. One of them is Finding Home. That's his autobiography. The next one is a brand new one called The Good Dad that's just now coming out, and we have links to both of those at homeward.com, and we encourage you to check those out, especially as we are approaching Father's Day here. If you're looking for a resource, those are two that Dr. Jim Burns recommends. They're very, very inspiring. Finding Home is not easy to read, but it's a very, very encouraging book. Now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.